from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning, we'll begin this morning's opening Forum Hour with a discussion about the ride service company Uber, which is facing a wrongful death lawsuit over a crash that killed a six-year-old girl in San Francisco on New Year's Eve. Sophia Liu was hit by a car driven by one of Uber's contractors, and Uber maintains the driver was not on duty for the company at the time of the accident. We'll look at what the suit means for riders, drivers, and for the rapidly expanding ride service industry. Then we turn our attention to a report on the reading proficiency of fourth graders, which highlights significant deficiencies and a need to revamp and reform early education. Forum is next. Join us for the hour after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. While crossing a street on New Year's Eve with her family in San Francisco, six-year-old Sophia Liu was struck by a car and killed. Her mother and young brother were also injured but survived, and yesterday the family filed a lawsuit against Uber, the smartphone app company that links up drivers and passengers. According to Uber, the driver was not providing services through them during the time of the accident because he had no passenger. The lawsuit argues that he was tagged into Uber's system and was therefore on the clock, and the lawsuit could have a major effect on so-called ride-sharing, ride-service industry, or as it's come to be called also, the transportation network companies industry. We want to discuss the lawsuit in this opening half-hour segment of Forum, and joining us in studio is John Brooks, a regular contributor and blogger to KQED's Newsfix, former editor. Welcome, John.
Hi, Michael.
Glad to have you. Also glad to have David Levine with us by phone, law professor at UC Hastings College of the Law, and we welcome you, David Levine. Good morning.
Thank you, Michael. Good morning to both of you.
Glad to have you both here. And John Brooks, let's begin with you. I guess begin at the beginning here. I mean, Uber essentially presents the fact that they consider drivers partners, not employees, which would obviously limit their liability. But it gets down here to a key question of, well, are they like a dating service? I mean, do they set these things up? Or are they a company that's compelled to abide by rules like the cabs abide by?
Yeah, well, I think that's a really big issue, and that's something that a lot of all the TNCs basically argued during the CPUC proceedings. They said that they were basically just a website, you know, or not a website, but a software company kind of connecting drivers to passengers as opposed to the quasi-transportation company that the CPUC really decided that they are.
And they are a company valued at $3.5 billion. So this is a big lawsuit. I mean, this could test the whole liability of tech companies in this whole industry.
It could. The lawsuit seems to rely mostly on California's distracted driver laws. I mean, it's interesting. I have talked to a lot of cab company people over the last few months, you know, drivers and industry people, regulators, people like that who have no love for the TNCs, these ride service companies. The one thing they gave me a lot of different criticisms of the TNCs. One thing I did not hear was that the app creates a distraction. So that's kind of interesting. I also did talk to an Uber taxi driver yesterday. You know, Uber has several types of services. One of them will connect you with just regular taxis. And he said that the app is similar to the taxi dispatch system he uses just for his regular job. You hear an audio beep, and then you just quickly hit the screen to accept it. So whether the suit has merit, you know, I don't know. I think we'll have to see.
Well, we'll talk with David Levine in a moment about this. California law is pretty specific on apps and distracted drivers and drivers interacting with Uber to perhaps locate or pick up a passenger. But talk, if you would, about the common carrier principle, because that holds sway here, too.
Yeah, well, you know, Uber is has been designated a transportation network company. That is a new category that the CPUC designated. They just kind of created it out of whole cloth, and they ruled that you know, it must come under certain regulations. And they ruled that this is a commercial enterprise. This is not a ride-sharing, quote-unquote ride-sharing business, as they argued before. So that really does put it under the rubric of all kinds of state regulations.
Well, David Levine, let's get a legal perspective on this. Uber shares profit, so the argument goes from the lawyer in this case, and we'll hear actually a cut from him in a moment, but therefore they should share responsibility, Christopher Dolan says.
Well, Michael, I think that's basically the large measure that's right. I think it does very much depend on the relationship. You know, you said something about a dating service, or this morning as I was on my way to BART, I walked past a casual carpool line, and, you know, the city of Oakland puts up a sign which says, hey, we're not responsible for this. But the connection between Uber and its drivers is much more than just, you know, a dating service or something like that. Uber collects the money. They suggest, quote unquote, the fare, but they're collecting the money. They're taking a commission. All those things. You know, the connection seems to me to be pretty close. And it's not just that the case relies on some detail about the California Vehicle Code and the use of, you know, not using hands-free device or something like that. But there's a lot of standard California negligence law that's in this case. And I think the more important issue, the overriding issue, is what is that legal relationship, and will companies like Uber have to have what we call technically respondeat superior, like an employer-employee relationship? So the negligence of the agent is charged to the principal. That's the real question here. What is that relationship? The detail is less important.
And as I actually come to the realization that this is only a half-hour segment, and there are many of you who probably have strong emotions about this or some thoughts about it, let me give the phone number out now. You may want to weigh in, and if you do or want to join the conversation, I want to invite you to do that now. Our toll-free number, 866-733-6786. I want to open the phone lines now and invite you to join us. And, of course, you can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum, but please feel free to join the program. I had said that Christopher Dolan, the attorney in this who's representing the Liu family, actually held a news conference yesterday, and he said that the driver was clearly working for Uber, even though he wasn't carrying a passenger. Let's hear.
What he was on their app, available for people to pick him as a driver, which is the very essence of Uber's business. Without those people having empty cars, Uber has no business.
Well, that's the perspective of the lawyer representing the family, and we should mention also, David Levine, that this is a lawsuit that's pretty extensive. I mean, it's not only suing for wrongful death, it's suing for negligent hiring and supervision that's negligent, and a motor vehicle negligence, also emotional distress. The driver, by the way, I should mention to you listeners, was cited for failure to yield. He was arrested. He's out on bail, and this gets into some big questions about insurance liability, too, doesn't it, David Levine?
It sure does. I mean, and I think underlying this is really that question of insurance liability, because, I mean, one issue that's going to come up, I'll bet anything, is that the driver's insurance company may say, wait a minute, you know, you didn't tell us you were driving commercially. We have no responsibility whatsoever for this case, and they potentially could disclaim responsibility, number one. Number two, if this driver has what would be typical, which would be pretty minimal insurance, maybe $20,000 for the incident, that's nothing in comparison to the losses of this family. So the liability, the ultimate liability of companies like Uber is really, really important in this situation.
I'm also struck here, John Brooks. My takeaway is this industry needs regulation. It's almost crying for regulation.
Well, there are certainly those who would agree with you, mostly on the taxi side of things. They have been arguing strenuously that this new business needs more regulation like they are regulated. They're also arguing that they should be regulated on a local level, as the taxi industry is. They don't think that the CPUC really is going to have the bandwidth to investigate all these specific issues like this, like insurance, like safety. You know, they have responsibility for the entire state, whereas someone like the SFMTA is just focused on San Francisco.
Some of these so-called rideshare drivers are probably hiding from the insurance companies that they're doing this. In fact, you went out and talked to a number of insurance companies or called them, Allstate, AAA, and so forth, and a lot of these queries went unanswered.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the really interesting thing about this is if you try and get insurance and your personal insurance and you're upfront about what you intend to use the car for, which is really a commercial enterprise now, as the CPUC has ruled, there doesn't really seem to be a lot of interest from the insurance industry in insuring you. We did a report the other day. Two Uber taxi drivers, you know, they work for they are connected through Uber Taxi. They're just regular taxi drivers. And Uber kind of has a program now to get some taxi drivers to switch over to Uber X, which is just the ride, quote unquote, ride sharing portion of the business where they would own their own personal vehicles. And they were very excited about doing this. And they were unable to obtain either personal insurance or commercial insurance when they were upfront to the insurance companies and said exactly what they wanted to use it for. In fact, one guy said, you know, he was talking to a livery insurance company. They hadn't even heard of TNCs. So, you know, there's, I think this is a real open question as to whether anyone is really insured if they have a TNC vehicle. And this case of the New Year's Eve accident, I mean, it's kind of a crystallization of all these issues. You know, the TNCs kind of did trumpet the $1 million liability policies they have, but nobody has really seen them except this, for the CPUC and the companies. There could be all types of exclusions, deductibles, that kind of thing. And so here's a case where the guy might have thought he was covered. I mean, it would have been reasonable for him to assume that, but Uber says, oh, you're not covered because you weren't on a call, physically on a call at the time. You were between calls. I mean, that's different than the taxi industry. When you're driving around waiting for a fare, you are still covered. Okay, so can he then rely on his personal insurance if he's not covered commercially? Well,
the insurance companies will say he's operating commercially, so Uber's right. Responsible.
Some smart company is going to sell a policy. There's money to be made here. And somebody will create a policy, and the companies Uber and Lyft and the others will steer their drivers to those companies, and it'll get worked out. It's just this is such a fast-moving situation where, you know, these companies have come along just in the last couple of years, and the rest of the system needs to catch up a little bit.
Well, I want to read a statement, actually, from Uber. It's a statement on the New Year's Eve accident from the company. They say, our hearts go out to the family and victims of the tragic accident that occurred in downtown San Francisco on New Year's Eve. We extend our deepest condolences. We work with transportation providers across the Bay Area. The driver in question was not providing services on the Uber system during the time of the accident. The driver was a partner of Uber, and his account was immediately deactivated. We are committed to improving the already best-in-class safety and accountability of the Uber platform for both riders and drivers. I ought to add, by the way, this driver had a record in Florida, a pretty serious record, driving over 100 miles an hour and so forth. And maybe it brings in a question also how much, checking ought to go on by a company like Uber in terms of who their drivers are. But I want to get your calls on, and I want to go first to Jack, who's joining us online here. Jack, hi.
Yeah, hey, Mike. What I'm trying to figure out is the liability and where this case can go for people that drive for a living. I'm in sales, and I typically use my own car. And I work for companies, and they'll reimburse me for my car. But I do have to have my own insurance. So my understanding is by having my own insurance, the company is not liable if I get into an accident, even though I am working for them full-time, and I am driving for them, to go on my sales calls and meetings. They're not responsible. So I'm wondering why would Uber be responsible if I am working for Uber, and my understanding is they only get like maybe 10 or 15 or 20%. I'm an independent contractor. When a corporation that employs people who drive for them, they're not responsible either, because my understanding is that since I have my own insurance, that's why I have to have my own insurance.
Yeah, Jack, you raised, I think, an important question, how far the liability would stretch. And David Levine, how do you read that?
Well, I think it would very much depend factually on the situation. Of course, the Jack's employer wants to say, oh, we're not responsible. But that's not at all clear under the law that that would be the case. Certainly they would want somebody like Jack to have insurance, but, boy, I'm not at all clear that whoever his employer is could just wash their hands. If there were an accident and Jack were working, you know, during working hours on a call on their behalf. So these get to be gray, without a doubt.
And listener writes on our website, the Dolan firm, that is the attorneys representing the family, is apparently arguing that Uber's liability stems from its requirement that drivers use a distracting iPhone app and that Uber does not train drivers safe procedures for using that app. In that sense, this case has broader implications and probably useful ones for safer driving policies to be established. All that said, rest in peace, Sophia. The family is clearly devastated. And Frank writes, Uber is essentially creating a fleet of uninsured drivers with their careless disregard for pedestrians and other drivers. Most personal insurance, which is all that many Uber drivers have, will not pay out if they find out that you're driving passengers for hire. Uber should be providing full liability insurance anytime a driver is listed as available on their platform. And John says, suppose I hurt someone while driving away from a consulting meeting. Is the company I consult for liable? David Levine?
Well, it would depend again on the exact relationship. Think about something like a FedEx driver, you know, these FedEx ground drivers who Federal Express tries to treat as independent contractors. There's definitely great pizza delivery drivers. There's all sorts of situations. It's a spectrum. You can't, with just a little bit of information, you can't be sure which side of the line they would fall on. So all I can tell you is come to law school because the answer is sometimes yes, sometimes no.
Well, let's get some more of our callers on. Scott? Good morning.
Hi, thanks. I find this conversation frustrating, to be honest with you, because we wouldn't be having it if it wasn't for the fact that Uber's process and their app and their service is just night and day better than the San Francisco taxi service. I can put somebody in a car and I can follow them all the way home and make sure that they get there safely by the app. You know, as somebody who, let's say someone's at a party at my house and I put them in the, you know, a cab to go home. We use it all the time at work just because it's reliable, it's great. So if the taxi service wants to try to develop an app that's like this that can compete with Uber, that's fine. But I find picking at it from an insurance and liability standpoint is sort of trying to change the discussion.
All right. Well, I thank you for bringing that in. John Brooks, want to comment?
Well, I don't think there's any doubt that people really like these services. They like Uber. They like Lyft. They like Sidecar. Passengers like it. San Francisco is notoriously hard to get a cab in. I've talked to people in the taxi industry who acknowledge as much that they have not really been up to snuff in providing services. So they really created an opening for this new type of business. The cab industry is trying to catch up. Chris Hayashi, who's the regulator for the SFMTA of cab services, she's trying to kind of nudge cab companies along into the 21st century. There are some apps now, Flywheel, I think Taxi Magic is the other one, where you can get a regular cab. It's really the same kind of process as you use for Uber or Lyft.
This is a tough town for cabs, though. I think the caller's right.
It is a tough town for cabs. You know, you go out
and for the cab drivers as well as for the people trying to get the cabs. But, well, I mean, there's a lot of enmity against this whole industry from the cab drivers, understandably so. But the cab industry is not exactly competing on the level that we're talking about here. And I want to thank Scott for the call and get to another caller. And that's Bobby. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me. I presume that Lyft and Uber and all these other, transportation network, whatever they have them calling now, but I assume they want to grow and I assume they want to be here for a long time and have an expansive business model. Given that, I just don't get why they're fighting regulation so hard. It seems that it's inevitable they're going to get regulated. They're not going to grow two or three times the size they are now. Completely unregulated. I just don't understand why they don't embrace the process now and set up a good policy that works for everyone.
Any notion of why maybe there's a resistance, John Brooks?
Well, I mean, they are being regulated now. I think the question is to what degree. The CPUC did issue regulations last year. You know, there's certain background check requirements. There's certain safety requirements. As vague as they are, there are some insurance requirements now. They did not want to be regulated. As I said before, a couple of companies argued that they should not come under the auspices of the CPUC. But, you know, I think the reason they want less regulation is the reason any business wants regulation, less regulation, which is because they can compete better. The taxi industry would argue that because of kind of this light regulatory regime on the business, that they are at a big competitive advantage. The insurance is just one aspect of it. I think cabs pay like $10,000 per cab, you know, to insure their drivers. It's unlikely that the TNC companies pay that much.
I want to go to more of your comments. Actually, we asked listeners on Facebook, what's your take on the lawsuit and Uber's subsequent response? Does it make you less likely to use a ride service like Uber or Lyft? Joe says, the only concern I have is whether the drivers or Uber's insurers denying coverage. The driver might not have liability coverage for commercial transportation, and Uber might not have liability coverage for personal transportation. And Wendy writes, Uber's business plan depends on not taking responsibility. Liz tweets, the only way I get a ride from where I live in San Francisco is via Uber. It's a terrible shame. A girl was killed because of distracted driving. And Russ writes, I'm no fan of the taxi system in San Francisco, yet if Uber wins the case and avoids responsibility for the death of a six-year-old girl, then the city council and legislature needs to ban such services. Don emails us, when my Geico auto policy recently came up for renewal, there was an included statement that ride-sharing activities were not covered. And Red writes, I don't know what the law says, if anything, but cab drivers between calls are always working. In fact, might be driving even more dangerously than they do with a fare in the care because they're scouting for a new fare. They drive aggressively between fares to make more money. Uber needs to be more responsible for this. Shameful. Shameful. Jim writes, why not apply the same regulations to Uber as normal taxi services? And Marty asks, is ride sharing the same as apartment sharing? Who's responsible in the physical world for regulations, maintenance, taxes? Will Airbnb pay to fix the pay to fix the plumbing when their customers from the cloud cause damage in apartments they don't own or rent? Let me go to more of your calls, and we'll go next to Berkeley and welcome M. Good morning.
Good morning. So I drive for all three, Lyft, Uber, and Sidecar, and I had a hard time actually finding insurance when I would talk to the insurance companies telling them what I was going to use it for. After all, I'm paying about $200 a month for insurance, and when I break down all my costs to drive for these companies, I'm only actually making about $12 an hour. And for me, there's no safety net, because there's no backup if something like this were to happen. And I actually purchased the vehicle to directly drive for these companies. The other issue, too, is that they all have rating systems that if you score usually like 4.6 and below from a rating from a passenger, then you're removed from the program. So, for instance, if a passenger wants you to, say, get somewhere faster or make an illegal U-turn and you say no, then they can give you like a 3 or 4, which is really a fail, because you need a 4.6 out of 5 in order to stay in the program.
Let me thank you for the call. We're running out of short of time here. I'd like to have Professor Levine respond to what you just said. David Levine?
Well, I think, A, on the insurance, somebody's going to come in and see a market. So I think that problem will get solved. Smart insurance companies will take care of that. The issue about whether it's worth it, then if Uber doesn't end up at the end of the day paying its drivers enough, people won't sign up. So, again, the market is going to take care of that. And then the last part about people urging illegal turns and all, I mean, that's very problematic. And maybe they'll have to adjust that rating system as well.
Well, we will continue to cover this story, to watch what happens in the process. I want to thank our guest, John Brooks, who is contributing blogger for KQED Newsfix, former editor, and David Levine, law professor, UC Hastings College of the Law. And you, our listeners, we are coming back with another segment. We're going to talk about a new study about reading levels and may surprise you, the results of that study when we return on Forum. I'm Michael Krasny.